And we're back. Welcome to Speak Up Las Cruces on KTAL LP 101.5 FM. In Las Cruces, we're going to be talking in the next half hour with NMSU economics professor emeritus Jim Peach, who has spent a lifetime trying to study and understand and help other people understand the oil markets, the international. You even wrote a book that's a mystery novel that is centered in that world. Not surprisingly, a murder mystery, so there's a little darky murkiness. When you look at what's going on today, let's start with where are we at and where do you see this thing going?
Oh, good question. We've got such uncertainty in the White House. That it's hard to tell you where it's going. If it ended today, there's still a few weeks to get back to where we were. If it goes on longer, it may be months. Right now, of course, the Straits of Hormuz are closed.
Yes.
The Saudis have reduced their oil production by 2 million barrels a day, down from a little over 10 million barrels a day, down to 8. And that's upset world markets. The price of West Texas Intermediate this morning was a little over $94. That's down a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's going to bounce around.
But what was it a couple months ago?
65.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, it's so quite
up
high.
By a third.
Yes.
Yeah, but not historically high.
I was going to say, yeah. And prices at the pump aren't, you know, what they were during the OPEC oil embargo.
Well, in the first week of July 2008, West Texas Intermediate hit $147 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 2008.
Yeah, yeah.
All of the experts, including Boone Pickens, who knew a lot more about oil than any of us will ever know, said it'll be 200 by December. In fact, it was 40 in December.
Mm.
So he only missed it by $160 a barrel.
Yeah.
Oil prices have always, with a couple of exceptions, the 50s and early 60s, been volatile.
Yes.
In fact, there's a book called Crude Volatility. I wish I had written it. The guy who wrote it took charts of oil prices as far back as he could and said, look, this is the normal state of oil markets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So don't panic.
Hang
on to your hat. It'll settle down.
On the other hand, it has some real consequences. We're likely to see $4 a gallon gas in New Mexico, which is quite a bit higher than it was 2 weeks ago, three
yes.
weeks ago.
Yes.
The cost of shipping things is going to increase. The cost of airline tickets is going to increase. And those are just kind of the direct effects.
Yeah.
Now, in New Mexico, when the price of oil goes up, state revenue is going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
That will not affect this year's budget. It will not affect next year's budget. Mm-hmm. The legislature has already met.
Right.
And any sort of windfall gain that we get goes into one of the many permanent funds, stabilization funds mainly. So it won't, in the short run, have much of an effect on New Mexico's finances, the state finances.
One of the things we hear from the president's supporters is because we produce so much of our own, energy here at home, that and because everything, not everything, but most of what's flowing through the Straits of Hormuz isn't coming to us, it's going to other parts of the world, that we should be able to provide for our own needs and should be in some way insulated from this.
Oil markets are, in effect, world markets. They are not local. They are not national. If you look at oil prices around the world, you can probably find 150 or 200 different oil prices because oil varies in quality and in location. And there's not – people talk about the price of oil. There's no such thing. We are still a net importer of crude oil, despite what the president says. I don't want to get too political here, but you'll hear a lot of nonsense if you listen to the financial networks or to political leaders.
So we're exporting other oil that isn't as good? Is that what's happening?
We exported last year in 2025 a little over 4 million barrels of oil a day. We imported a little bit more than 6 million barrels of oil a day. We produced at the end of 25, we don't have 26 numbers yet, 13.6 million barrels a day. We consume about 17 million barrels a day.
Okay.
So we are a net importer.
Okay.
The figures that you see that say we are a net exporter of petroleum and petroleum products is true.
Okay.
But if you count petroleum products, they all came from crude. So you are double counting something there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are we exporting? We don't know. Whether it, once oil gets into the system, there is no measurement of, well, this came from the Permian Basin or this came from Canada. We don't know.
Yeah. Is one better than the other?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oil varies really a lot of characteristics, but the two main ones are whether it flows easily. That's called viscosity. And the other one is sulfur content. West Texas and New Mexico oil is really sweet crude. It is not high sulfur, flows easily. It's primo oil. It really, really is. The oil we get from Canada, on the other hand, out of the shale sands up there, that's thick and not so sweet.
Okay.
The phrase West Texas Intermediate is because it is a blend of West Texas and New Mexico sweet, light, crude, and some heavier, sour stuff.
Right.
So,
okay.
It's an interesting market.
And that's why prices here are affected, even though we don't have oil on the streets of Hormuz.
Sure.
Tied into the global economy here.
Into the globe. And there's no way of getting around that.
Yes.
So it, you know, what happens in the future is all going to depend on how long the war lasts.
Sure. Do we have any sense of how many mines have been laid and how long, if it were to stop today, it would take to?
I was listening last night and early this morning. We do not know if they've laid any mines or not.
Okay.
There may be none out there.
Right.
There may be a lot.
We just don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a problem.
that's a problem. But it's not just mines. They could attack ships in the straits with drones or RPGs.
Well, and the other thing that has not happened yet, but to a large extent, there have been some attacks on oil fields, but that hasn't happened large scale yet, and no attack yet on Karg Island, where I guess that's where they store it all.
Well, we bombed the military facilities on Karg Island.
Right.
But I think Trump is not talking about bombing the infrastructure, the oil infrastructure on Karg Island.
You know, I'm not a military strategist. I spent some time in the military, but I'm not a military strategist. We haven't done a lot of things that we could have. We could destroy their oil infrastructure and put them out of business for a year or two.
Right.
We could shut down the electricity grid. We could hit the generating stations and turn that nation dark. There are reasons not to do that.
Yes.
But, sure. Yeah, of course.
That doesn't mean that this administration will follow those reasons.
We have no idea what this administration will do. We have no idea what the end game is.
Yeah, I guess that's where I was going. That whatever damage has been done so far, I mean, this could get a lot worse before it gets better.
It could get a lot worse.
Yeah.
It could.
Yeah.
The Saudis have cut back production. The UAE and Qatar have cut back production some. And as even the talking heads on the financial networks will tell you, it's not like the spigot in your bathtub. You don't just turn it on and off.
Right.
It takes time to do these things.
Yes.
In New Mexico, one of the key indicators is the number of active rigs. That's almost a predictor of future production. Because we don't drill dry holes anymore.
Right.
We used to drill a lot. But we've been sitting for a year at 100, 105, sometimes 107. Once or twice it got below 100 a little bit. But we've been sitting right at 100 active rigs for quite a while. Now, there has been no increase in the last couple of weeks. It takes a long time to get ready to drill a new well.
Yeah.
It takes geological work, engineering work.
We're
takes
not
permits.
Magically going to be able to expand our oil production.
No.
Yeah, I see.
No.
Yeah.
It takes site preparation.
Yeah.
You have to get a rig in place. You have to get pipe in place. You have to get have a way to get that oil from the well to someplace where it can be used.
Yeah,
it's
a lot of steps.
If I decided, I don't have that kind of money, but if I decided to drill a well today, it'd be months before.
Sure.
The rig was in place and the drilling could start.
Which leads me to Venezuela, where I think all of this foreign adventurism first started. I think the president looked at the oil reserves there that were not being tapped and was convinced that if I could get Maduro out, Chevron and Exxon and all the American companies will become flooding in and it'll be just like it was before.
They're not anxious to do that. And
because of the quality of the oil.
Well, the oil is heavy and sour.
Yeah.
Now, we can process that stuff. That's true. We did it for a long time. But the infrastructure in Venezuela is a wreck. The oil infrastructure.
Yeah. I mean, how long has it been since they had a thriving?
15 years.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And that stuff rusts.
Sure.
And
yeah.
That's really
it's
expensive.
Just been sitting in the, yeah.
Now, the Darren Wood, the head of Exxon, when that happened, and he was first asked about it, he said, Venezuela is uninvestable.
That's pretty clear.
Now, whatever you think of Exxon, I don't care, but the man knows the market.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're not going to pour a bunch of money in unless they have some assurance that they can be there long enough to make it worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I do think that's where this all started because that military operation was so successful and went so well that. You know, I'm trying to read Donald Trump's mind, and that's obviously a dangerous thing.
I can't read his mind.
Yeah.
This is And especially on oil markets. We haven't had a president in 100 years who is so ignorant.
Yes.
About oil markets.
Well, yeah.
You can't find one.
And it seems like he's resisting any information that might change his mind, that he just does things spontaneously.
He doesn't seem to care about information.
Yeah.
You know, in the last week or 10 days, he said, we produce so much oil, we produce double the next nearest producer.
Yes, which was...
That's nonsense.
I knew that wasn't right, but that's why I was under the perception that we were, as I said, I thought we were a net exporter.
Well, we're a net exporter of petroleum and petroleum products.
Which doesn't tell the story.
Which does not tell the story. We are not a net exporter of crude.
Right. And that doesn't surprise
where all
me.
Of the petroleum products come from.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can't double count that and be meaningful.
And when you look at our consumption, I mean, that really shouldn't come as a surprise.
No, we've reduced consumption a little bit over the years.
We have.
Especially since 1973 when we had the OPEC embargo. Per dollar of GDP, we use a lot less oil today than we did 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Why did prices, because we keep hearing that this is the greatest disruption in the global market ever. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well,
but why haven't prices spiked as high, or maybe they still will? I don't know if they're done going up yet. But
I hear that. In April 2020, at the beginning of the pandemic, we had that one day where the price of oil was negative.
Mm. Where I remember that.
They would have to pay you.
Yes.
You know, when it had fallen fairly dramatically.
Because nobody was driving.
By the end of March, and someone asked me, and I said, posted price was $20 a barrel then. Hmm. And I said, I'll sell you all you want at 10. The only problem is you have to take delivery of this shit.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Technical term. And that scared them off. Now, that was a dramatic disruption in prices. So in 2008, when we hit $147 for WTI, $150 for Brent, that was a dramatic disruption.
Mm-hmm.
When in 1973, when the price went from $3.50 a barrel to $6.50 a barrel,
mm-hmm.
that was a dramatic disruption. This is not the first dramatic disruption in oil prices.
Well, yeah, for sure.
And is it the biggest one? Yeah. I haven't gone back to look. In 08, that $147 would be well over $300 a barrel now.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And it depends, as you mentioned earlier, on how long this lasts, and which we can't predict.
I can't. In fact, I've been forced a couple of times to predict oil prices. Given the nature of my job, but I've never liked to play that game because it was real easy in the 1950s and early 60s.
Yes.
Yeah.
$3, three and a quarter, get you all the oil you wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Right.
Not before that.
Yeah. So go ahead.
In the 1930s, the early 1930s, the price of oil was less than 10 cents a barrel.
Hmm.
10 cents. You couldn't buy water. You couldn't buy beer that cheap. And the governor of Texas, Ross Sterling, sent in the National Guard and the Texas Rangers and shut down all 1,464 wells in East Texas.
Hmm.
Now, he was no flaming liberal. He was one of the founders of Humble Oil,
okay,
which you now know as Exxon.
Mm-hmm.
He was an oil guy, and he said, we can't have this. And he gave it over to the control of it over to the Texas Railroad Commission. Why railroads? Because we didn't have all those pipelines that we have now. Railroads transported the oil. And so from the early 1930s until 72 or 73, the Texas Railroad Commission controlled the price of oil in the world. Texas was the biggest producer. They had control over the supply of oil coming out of Texas.
Right.
They imposed something called the daily allowable. And they'd say, your well can produce X number. Your well can produce X number of barrels. And
yeah,
you control that.
Well, OPEC did the same thing, really, didn't
it? Real quick, I'll tell you my OPEC origin story.
Yeah.
I think OPEC originated at Schultz's Garden, which is a beer joint, halfway between the University of Texas and the state capitol. And
sure.
In the 50s and 60s,
yeah,
the best petroleum engineering departments in the world were the University of Texas and the University of Oklahoma.
Right.
And Middle Easterners, especially Saudis, sent their sons and an occasional daughter to Texas and Oklahoma to learn petroleum engineering. And they'd sit around and drink, and so would the guys from the Texas Railroad Commission. And they'd say, what do you do? Well, we set the Texas daily allowable. We control the price of oil. And I think the sons and daughters went home.
Uh-huh.
Now, OPEC was formed in 62. They didn't do anything with it until 72, 73. They didn't try to control the price of oil, but I think it originated with those guys drinking beer.
That wouldn't surprise me.
I can't document that except to tell you that I saw those people.
Yeah.
Talking to each other.
Yeah. And
ideas exchanged, yes.
Yeah.
So the oil companies have worked in dangerous parts of the world before. What is their tolerance for that kind of risk if this thing keeps dragging on?
You know, it's there's risk even when there's no war, no political disruption, no nothing. Oil, that's a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
You look at the number of people with missing fingers and arms and legs, and it's dangerous regardless. You've got to admire what these guys do. But we have had lots and lots of stuff. We installed the Shah of Iran in the early 50s.
Uh-huh.
Because we didn't want the Soviets to gain control of Iranian oil.
Yes.
And those chickens.
Yeah.
We do have a caller. We're in our last couple of minutes. Caller, give us just a second. We're going to have to put our headphones on here. Yeah, might have tangled a mess. Yeah, we'll do it like this. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, Dr. Pete. Gregory Stravanik. I'd like to know what you think about the offer from the Iranians concerning using the Chinese Luhan for the purchase of oil to release oil from the Middle East.
I'm sorry I didn't get all of that.
Using the...
On German news and the BBC, the Iranians under the table have offered all the other countries the release of oil from the Hormuz problem if they change the standard of purchasing oil to the Luhan dollar, Chinese Luhan dollar, from the American dollar, petrodollar.
I have not heard that, and I doubt that it's true.
So answer this question. If it were true and China could control the American petrol dollar, which is what all oil is sold on, because every country can't sell oil unless they have a dollar, right?
No, it's traded in a lot of different currencies.
Okay, well, then, unfortunately, I guess I got that wrong, because I thought in the 50s when the United States took over the oil production in the world, like you were talking about, from Texas, that it was slated that the oil could only be sold in dollars.
No, that's not the case.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
But there is a connection between foreign exchange rates and the price of oil. The best predictor of the price of Brent, which is kind of an international standard, is the exchange rate of the dollar.
I think the question goes to the, and we're in our last couple of minutes, but yeah. Iran is going to certainly try to find whatever kind of leverage it can out of this. How successful, I mean, do they have any cards that that they are able to play here at all, or can they just muck it up for a little bit?
Oh, they can muck it up for a long time if they keep the straits closed.
Yeah, yeah. But in terms of helping them, leveraging that to gain any kind of thing politically, I know that's a whole different world and you can't really predict that, but what are your thoughts?
I think that eventually the President of the United States will get tired of this, declare victory and go home, and not much will have changed.
Yeah.
But when that might happen, I don't know. I don't know that he knows.
Yeah, I think he's being pressured by some in his party so that you don't have a going into a midterm, so you don't have a foreign war, but it's who knows?
It more than a foreign war, it's the price you pay at the pump.
Yeah.
And the price you pay for an airline ticket and the price you pay to have goods delivered.
And just because we say we quit doesn't mean Israel does, and it doesn't mean that Iran does, and it doesn't mean...
Yeah, that's true.
You're absolutely right. I can't argue with that.
We have run out of time, Jim. As I knew we'd have more questions than we had time for, but this has been a very interesting and informative discussion.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you both.
Thank you for coming in.
Sure.